Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And good afternoon from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I am Jim Behnke, and this is the September 11th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, thanks for tuning in today, everybody. If you are interested in our nation's space program, then this is the radio show for you as we spend an hour together every Saturday to try and learn something about space, although not so much what's actually up there. Now that I think about it, I've been thinking about the past year of our show here on Space Talk, and I'm not so sure that we spent more than maybe 15 minutes or so talking about anything that's really celestial in nature, which I guess certainly reflects my own bias somewhat in that, I guess the reason I moved to Florida to be a part of the space program instead of, for example, Houston or Huntsville or even Pasadena, for that matter, in California, was because my interest in space has always been in the launching and the landing, the coming and the going, the transportation systems, the splashdowns. It's always been the hardware and the operations that has most fascinated me about space and space flight and the history of all that and how it's all put together and whatnot. So all those things seem like made sense to come to Florida and live on the space coast to get my dose of that. So I don't often think about what's actually in the sky. I certainly pay attention to the stars and the planets and look up. And, you know, I was out fishing last night with two of my boys, and I just don't know the summer constellations that well. Growing up in Minnesota, we learned the winter ones so well. But in any case, I'm certainly open to talking about things more astronomical here on the show. And if you think that's a good idea and we think we should spend some more time on that, I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to know. Send me an email to spacetalking@AOL.com. Let me know what you think and if you think a few shows about astronomy would make sense. I'd certainly be willing to accommodate those requests and those suggestions as we plan our future shows. I do want to thank you also for tuning in this afternoon and for putting up with a best of Space Talk last weekend during Labor Day. There was some good stuff replayed, and I do appreciate that my personal chief engineer, Aaron Michaels, helped put that together. Mrs. Behnke and I spent some airline miles and popped up to Minnesota for the Labor Day weekend to attend the Minnesota State Fair. And residual Minnesota accent is pretty much worn off during the last few days. But it was getting pretty thick up there, you know. You get amongst your fellow Minnesotans, and that's the way you talk. But the weather was perfect up there, high in the upper 60s, low in the upper 40s, clear skies, low humidity. It was just spectacular. Probably won't be like that here till, well, maybe December. Definitely put me in the mood for the kickoff of the NFL season. And even though my Vikings lost to the Saints Thursday night again, I still feel pretty good about our prospects for this year. So next up for the Vikings, you in Florida might be interested in knowing it's our home field opener in Minneapolis on September 19th against the Miami Dolphins. So we look forward to a little trash talking there in the next week or so. Well, anyway, with that business out of the way, I do want to focus now on our today's show, which falls on the 9th anniversary, as you all know, of the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States. And with that, I can't think of really a better guest to have on the show today than our most senior military officer on the Space Coast. The commander of the 45th Space Wing, Brigadier General Ed Wilson, will be joining us in just a few moments. We'll spend the hour talking with him about things all military space and what's going on here on the Space Coast. You know, if we go back to that Tuesday 9 years ago, you may remember that the Expedition 3 crew was aboard the International Space Station with two Russian cosmonauts and one American astronaut, our good friend Frank Culbertson, who this year was inducted into the U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame. Though he was off the planet that day, his view of the attacks from 200 miles up, along with his words, were moving well beyond words, beyond description. And within a day of the incident, he found out that a pilot of the plane that went down in Pennsylvania was a schoolmate of his. And all that just underscored for him, you know, how isolated he felt, even as he could look down and see most of what was going on, and in fact, in ways better than we could. He wrote some things that week. I want to just read a couple excerpts from some of the letters that he wrote home that week. On the day of the incident, on September 11th, later in the afternoon, he wrote, "Well," and this is quoting, "well, obviously the world changed today. When I say or do, or what I say or do is very minor compared to the significance of what happened to our country today when it was attacked by whom? Terrorists is all we know, I guess. Hard to know at whom to direct our anger and our fear. I had just finished a number of tasks this morning, the most time-consuming being the physical exams of all crew members. In a private conversation following that, the flight surgeon told me they were having a very bad day on the ground, and I had no idea." And so Frank went on in that first letter to talk about flying over New York and taking some video and how they all streaked to the windows to see all that. He talked about how, as the planes were grounded that day, that they couldn't see the contrails in the sky anymore, that the air over the United States was completely clear, and that was an unusual thing for them to see. The next day he wrote, quote, "It's horrible to see smoke pouring from wounds in your own country from such a fantastic vantage point. The dichotomy of being on a spacecraft dedicated to improving life on the Earth and watching life being destroyed by such willful, terrible acts is jolting to the psyche, no matter who you are, and the knowledge that everything will be different than when we launched by the time we land is still a little disconcerting." Amazing stuff. On the 14th, a couple days later, he described how everyone was being good to them, sending them best wishes. He was still feeling a little overwhelmed by all of the attention. He said he was inspired by the sight of a launch from Kazakhstan of a new docking compartment that was heading up to the space station, which he was able to see and videotape. And this is how he finished his writings for that week. He said, "Despite some bad lighting for a while as the sun hit our window at a low angle, I managed some video of it as we first passed the rocket and then watched it begin to catch up as it gained altitude and speed. I filmed until main engine cutoff and booster separation occurred just as we approached sunrise on the Himalayas. An unforgettable sight in an unforgettable week. Life goes on," he said, "even in space, we're here to stay." So those words written by Frank Culbertson aboard the International Space Station, 9 years ago this week. Just absolutely remarkable stuff. My day, that day on 911, I was working for space.com, in touch with my editors in New York City, who they could look out their window and see it all happening. Their office at that time was basically in Times Square, and they could look down Manhattan and see the smoke coming out of the World Trade Center. And I was on the phone with my editor at the time that the second plane hit, and heard everyone kind of gasp, and then, you know, it was like, we got to go, I'll call you right back. And we stayed in touch, of course, during the course of the day with them to find out what was going on. It was just, you know, again, for all of us, a surreal time. And who will forget here along the Space Coast the reaction here as the security clamped down, and we could talk a little bit about this with General Wilson, although he wasn't here at the time. About A1A closing in front of the Air Force Technical Applications Laboratory, and having to deal with all that and the detours and just what it was like to feel like, you know, we were also a target with our space shuttle program and our vehicles here. So again, an amazing time 9 years ago. We hope we've learned a lot since then, but it's clear we've got a long ways to go. Well, when we return, we will have General Wilson with us from the 45th Space Wing. You're invited to join us as well. Give us a call, 321-768-1240 or star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers. Send us an email to spacetalking@aol.com. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB. Stand by. We'll be right back.
Call Jim now, 768-1240, or star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers.
And welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. In addition to those phone numbers, you can send us an email anytime while you're online, perhaps listening at WMMBAM.com. Send us an email to spacetalking@AOL.com, and we'll see that pop up right here on the screen here in the studio. Well, today on this ninth anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks on the United States, we thought we'd focus a little bit more on our military space and on what's it all about in terms of protecting our nation. And there's no better person to do it than the senior military officer here on the Space Coast, the commander of the 45th Space Wing, Brigadier General Ed Wilson. Brigadier General Ed Wilson, he entered the Air Force in 1985 as a graduate of the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and spent his entire career basically involved on the space side of the house in operations, acquisition, policy, strategy, planning, combat support. He has commanded at just about every level I think you can command in the Air Force, the squadron, group, and wing levels. He's served on the staff of Air Force Space Command, U.S. Space Command. He's worked in the National Reconnaissance Office, and in February finally came back here to the Cape as a wing commander in charge of the 45th Space Wing, headquartered at Patrick Air Force Base. He's also the man in charge of the Eastern Range, which means he has the final authority on the safety of all launch and space operations here at the Cape. And talking to us, I think, from Cocoa Beach, he joins us on phone, Brigadier General Ed Wilson. General, how are you today, sir?
Hey, Jim, we're doing really well.
Good.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Good. Happy to have you here. Any diving today, or are you, you dry today?
All dry today, as a matter of fact, yeah. The last time we talked, we had just come out of the water from getting our certification down near Jupiter. But all dry today.
All dry today. That's great. Well, it is in a way, a somber day today, the anniversary of 9-1-1. And I want to start off, first of all, to on behalf of all of us civilians, say to you, thank you, and all of your colleagues in the military for your support and your dedication to what you do to protect our nation. And, you know, it's just, it's a remarkable, I guess, privilege to serve the way you're doing. And in that light, sir, talk to us about what our local folks are doing right now to protect and serve us overseas. I guess we've got some folks from Patrick that are on deployment.
We sure do, Jim. We've got right now over 150 folks downrange between the wing and our mission partners, like the 920th Rescue Wing. And in the next 30 days, we're going to have another 100 headed downrange, mostly in Afghanistan right now, as you can imagine with the buildup in Iraq. We've got a few folks over in Asia, Africa, and up in Europe right now. So we're really supporting the fight around the world right here from Patrick Air Force Base. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, when you mentioned the rescue wing, of course, you know, we say folks are deployed from Patrick. It's not like we're launching Atlas and Delta rockets over there. There are other tenants here at Patrick, other groups that call Patrick home. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, we've got over 30 different mission partners or tenants. So it'll take too long to go through the whole list, but the ones I think that are most visible, obviously the 920th, the rescue wing, they're here, their reserve unit. And so most folks see them flying here in the area over the weekend because mm-hmm. they come in and do their reserve duty on the weekend. As a matter of fact, this weekend's a reserve weekend, so you'll see a lot of helicopters and C-130s up in the air. The Air Force Technical Application Center is the other one that sits here on Patrick. That's the large I Dream of Jeannie building.
Right.
As well. And we're proud to report that we've got a military construction project getting ready to kick off next spring. They get them into a new headquarters building on Patrick. So that's a good news story there.
Good.
We've got the Navy Ordnance Test Unit up at the Cape and a lot of other mission partners. Obviously, NASA, you know, core to what we're doing, and the National Reconnaissance Office and a whole host of others.
You know, the 911 thing did bring to light the sensitivity to AVTAC's location on A1A. I mean, who would have thought back in the 50s when that thing was built that, you know, what a great idea to put it right on the beach. How beautiful, all the windows facing to the ocean and all that, and the reality of our life now and on our planet changed all that, of course, and in a very stark way that made it very real to everyone here in Brevard during that time when A1A was closed. But in any case, and so let's talk about you. You come to us as our newest wing commander here, and we've not had a chance to really talk about you personally. You've been in space, looks like, your whole career. What drove you, General, to Air Force into space? Was it one or the other? How did that all work out for you?
Well, you know, I was born into the business, if you will. My father's retired Air Force. And so we've got actually four generations of family, when I count back to my great-grandfather, all that have served in the military. But my father's retired Air Force officer, lieutenant colonel, and he's a navigator and flew in Vietnam out of Da Nang. So, you know, I was born on an Air Force base in Alabama, and Maxwell Air Force Base. And so grown up with it, carried an ID card my whole life. And I had the opportunity when I was in high school to meet some Air Force Academy graduates. And I was looking at colleges like Georgia Tech and Auburn and lots of other places. And it kind of appealed to me. I'm kind of an overachiever. I love sports. I love kind of learning new things, and I wanted to go into engineering. I had been working as a technician in high school, and the Air Force Academy had a really great engineering program, and that's what caught my eye, and so that's how I got to the Air Force Academy. If you had asked me, that was 29 years ago this past June, that I'd still be in the Air Force, I don't think I would have answered yes back then. But, I have very poor vision, and so I knew the day I signed up at the Air Force Academy, I wasn't going to be able to fly. And, you know, we didn't do all of the refractive surgeries back then. And when I started looking at the things you could get involved in, space just seemed like a perfect fit for me because it's, you know, high technology and you could support, you know, all of my classmates at the time, but now really the Air Force and the other services. You know, putting your talents to use, even though you can't climb into a jet and, you know, go do your business that way.
Yeah, but and if I remember correct now, if I look at your career, coming out of the academy when you did, the Air Force and the whole military really weren't that quite fully embraced of the space program yet. It was one of those novelty things that some guys did off in the corner. I mean, it really wasn't until the first Persian Gulf War that it really came into its own. And how does that fit in the timing of what you were doing? I mean, did you have to be recruited to do space, or did you actively pursue it? I mean, which way did that work?
When I came out of the Air Force Academy, we signed our dream sheets of where we wanted to go, and one of them, the options that was available, was Hanscom Air Force Base in Massachusetts, and I'd never lived in the Northeast, and so, to be honest, you know, as a young kid, it was, that sounds kind of neat, being a military kid and never having been up in the Northeast. I put Hanscom as my first choice, and I ended up going to Hanscom. And then when we got there, it was kind of unique. The three-star general, Lieutenant General Chubb at the time, allowed all of the young lieutenants a couple of weeks to interview, and then we actually got to put in for our jobs when we arrived on station. Hmm. And I had interviewed around, and I worked for I put in, and I got accepted to work for a Major Paul Nielsen, who retired just a few years ago as the commander of the Air Force Research Laboratory, as Major General Paul Nielsen, a two-star. And so that's how I got started. We worked on a program called the Space Development Operations Center, SPADOC for short, at Mountain. And that was my first exposure, and kind of got hooked on space as a young second lieutenant. And I guess the rest is history, so to speak.
It sure is. And now as you come in as a wing commander, you know, we've had other wing commanders come in from non-space units, non-space wings, and the joke has always been the first thing you got to do is teach them that the pointy end goes up. you obviously already knew that. Has it been easier for you to come in as a wing commander to this Space Operations Center with your background than maybe some of your other colleagues might have done in the past?
I think so, Jim. I really do. You know, space is a lot like any of the other disciplines, I think, in the military or Department of Defense or even in industry. It takes a while to really master, you know, the domain or the business. And space is very complicated. And, you know, it's taken me, you know, 25 years, and I definitely don't know it all, that's for sure. But it sure makes it easier to understand the mission, understand the people. You know, there's a lot of folks that have I've worked with in the past that are here at Patrick and up at the Cape. But that said, you know, there's a lot of different pieces of the space arena, you know, on-orbit operations, ground-based surveillance, missile warning, intelligence. You know, launch is one of many. It's kind of like asking a bomber pilot, I guess, all about transportation or fighters. You know, they're really not an expert in the other domain. And so space is a lot like that. So, but it's definitely helpful.
Well, And, you know, you talk about the specialty areas, you know, it takes you a while to learn. I've always thought it was a great idea when, like, when the weather folks here at the Cape, you know, that we put some civilians here. Rather than, you know, every 2 years you rotate and you rotate and you rotate and always bringing a new guy to this area. Sometimes there's such a steep learning curve that by the time you're here and you get it, you're moving on somewhere else. And you wonder if more of that long-term permanence could be built in. Is that something that space deserves, more of a 4 or 6 year term rather than a 2 year term? And with about a minute left there, General, can you talk a little bit about that? Is there a benefit to put people here in the longer term?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great point. I think there's balance is the important part. I think our younger, especially our military officers, they tend to do 3 or 4 year tours early on. And as we get more senior, we tend to do shorter tours. But if you look at the wing today, really only about a fourth of our manning in the space wing at the 45th is military, between officers and enlisted, and about a quarter is civilian, government civilian, and about half is contractors. So really, three-fourths of our team is already pretty much stays put. We get a lot of stability out of the team. So when you kind of peel the onion back and look at it, kind of the demographics of how we do business as a wing, I think we've got a good balance. We've got a lot of stability. And then the military members, especially our senior folks, when they come in, they bring some fresh insights.
That's good. We're going to stop you right there, General. Stand by. We're going to take our 5-minute built and hold. Be back with more with Space Talk right here on WMMB.
Be here for the heroes in orange jumpsuits.
Be here to feed your curiosity.
Be here for the goosebumps.
Major goosebumps.
Be here for the eye-opening.
Jaw-dropping. Excitement.
Of exploring space.
Be here for a day of fun.
And a lifetime of inspiration.
Be here at Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. Now through September 6th, Florida residents receive a free child admission with each paid adult. Restrictions apply. Download your coupon at kennedyspacecenter.com/Florida.
This is Space Talk with Jim Behnke.
Like that. Well, welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Again, the number is 321-768-1240. Local AT&T wireless customers can dial *1240. Or if you prefer to communicate online, send an email to spacetalking@AOL.com. And any one of those three ways will get you connected to the program here. We are always happy to take your questions and comments, either for our guest, in this case, Brigadier General Ed Wilson from the 45th Space Wing, or any topic having to do with space. We're happy to answer your questions and see what's on your mind. And during the week, we invite you to stay in touch with us via Twitter. Our account name is Space Talking, and you can always visit the WMMB homepage at WMMBAM.com. Use the keywords Space Talk to find our show page, and we try to keep that up to date as best we can. And you can also go to that webpage, get a podcast of today's program, and learn all sorts of other things that are going on here at WMMB on Florida's Space Coast. Again, our guest today on this September 11th, 9th anniversary of the terrorist attacks on America, our guest, Brigadier General Ed Wilson, the commander of the 45th Space Wing, which also by default makes him the commander of the Eastern Range and the sole final authority for launching rockets from the Cape in terms of public safety. And General Wilson, that's a load on your shoulders, I would imagine, to give that final go.
Definitely, you get your butterflies before every launch. But the balance is, we've got a great team, so that's what keeps me out of trouble, I guess.
Well, and you've got a great team, and you've got some great equipment out there too. But one of the things that has been a big topic along the Space Coast for a long time has been this notion of range modernization. I had started my career at Florida Today even into the late 80s, going into the early 90s, and it was still rotary phones being used out at the Cape. I don't think touch tone came until the decade of the 90s. But modernizing everything, getting it space-based, all that seems to be a constant effort. And sometimes we hear about it, sometimes we don't. What's the status now of our range, and how modern is it, and how much more work do you think needs to be done out there?
Well, fortunately, we don't have rotary phones anymore, Jim.
Yeah, touch tone all the way.
boy. Yeah, I haven't seen one anyway moving around. We definitely, the range, as you know, is so complex, and it's taken us really half a century to build it, and we've got some antiquated equipment out there. We've been very diligently over the last several years working at a phased approach to upgrade different components, whether that's instrumentation or infrastructure, really all different facets of the range. And we've built up a plan. Matter of fact, we're going to finalize that next month with the team to look at our infrastructure upgrades in particular, but also some of the upgrades to different radars, telemetry sites, or command destruct, and all the different pieces of the range. I'd have to say we're doing pretty well. We definitely need to invest more. I mean, we could continue to invest. And we're going to need to continue to invest to bring the range around and make it, you know, truly modern and revolutionary. And one of the things we've been working with NASA on is, as they look at the 21st century, they have a program that's, you know, beginning to stand up 21st century space complex, space launch complex. We're working with them in partnership to make sure that we capture all the right requirements, and we're looking at all the different mission sets that need to fly off the Eastern Range.
Well, and let's spend 30 seconds on sort of range 101 for those that are wondering what really we're talking about. You're talking about radars to track vehicles to make sure they don't go off course and to deal with them if they do.
That's right. So, you know, on a perfect launch, we watch everything fly away, and, you know, radars that actually are putting energy out and watching the rocket, or telemetry antennas to actually pull signals off of the rocket, as well as optic sight to be able to track the rocket. So when a launch vehicle and the satellite on board are launching nominally, not a problem. It's when it's not behaving correctly that, you know, that's why we have all that equipment out there, so that we can destroy the vehicle before it flies into an area that, you know, would do harm to somebody or destroy property.
And of course, the big thing, too, the really even geographically, a bigger component of that is what's happening on the ground or on the surface of the ocean, in keeping the area clear from the track of the rocket and booster rockets falling off. And I think that the general public just kind of cringes and says, you know, there's a ship suddenly at the last minute that delays the launch. Why didn't we see that, you know, hours ago? And there's just a lot of ocean to cover.
There is. And we work with a lot of different agencies. You know, we have our own organic radars there on the Cape, but we also work with Coast Guard, with the 920th Rescue Wing. That's one of their missions, is to help us clear zones out over the ocean, as well as we work with the FAA for traffic, air traffic control. So we monitor the skies. So it is complex, that's for sure. In a day of launch, it's amazing all the different disciplines that come together to make sure that we can not only successfully launch, but safely launch a rocket, so that we don't, you know, have a problem when a rocket flies awry, if you will.
Yeah, and of course, teamwork counts on the fact that, in my opinion, these pilots and these ocean-going captains are doing their share, too, by reading the notice to mariners and reading the notice to airmen that says clear out of these areas, you know, and those words go out. That's communicated well in advance. And
it is. We start that process about 10 days out to make sure that commercial airliners, as well as the cruise ships and all of the small surface vessels, have a good advance warning of when the launch time frames are going to be.
That's right. Now, of course, it is the Air Force's job now to run that range. Do you see that continuing for as long as can be? There's always been this talk that again, cycles every once in a while about the FAA taking over, depending on when commercial becomes at a certain level. Is it the FAA running? Should it be the state governments? You know, right now it's the Air Force. Do you see that continuing as far as you can see, or you have any thoughts on that?
You know, given the importance of space right now to the Department of Defense, I think we will see that. I mean, the Air Force has been charged with the space launch mission, but I'll balance that with, we've also been challenged to make sure we're working with commercial vendors, with the civil agencies, as well as intelligence community, everybody that needs to use a range. And you know, the Cape is very unique. I don't ever see a day where we're going to build another Cape Canaveral. It's very unique.
Right.
Piece of ground, and as you know, the infrastructure that's out there is really unmatched anywhere in the world. And you know, given the environmental concerns and overflight concerns, I just personally, I don't see us ever as a nation, you know, developing another range along a coast like we have at Cape Canaveral. So it's it's incumbent upon the Air Force to make sure that we're partnering with all the other agencies. And so that's been one of the challenges that our senior leadership, General Kaler on down, really from the president on down, has challenged us to how do you bring commercial companies in particular and grow the domestic launch business, help to grow the domestic launch business. You know, we're one of those pieces. There's a lot of other facets out there, but we're one of the pieces is how can we bring those companies out and, you know, we're not paying the whole way, but to make it available, make the assets that are out at the Cape available for commercial launch activity.
Well, and there's no doubt that, and I'll say this objectively, that the Air Force has come a long way in dealing with and cooperating with the commercial side of the house. You've got your requirements. They're real. They exist. And a lot of times you don't have control over them. Commercial folks just culturally do things differently and have a different mindset and a different goal, you know, in terms of the bottom line. And those two cultures often clash, but lately it seems to be a lot better than it used to be, and I know there's a long way to go yet, so I don't want my commercial folks yelling at me yet, but, you know, you guys have been getting along.
We've got a ways to go. I think, you know, if you look back in June when we partnered with SpaceX, I mean, Mr. Musk, Elon Musk and his team, what a tremendous success for the Falcon 9 flying, and you know, what we've done is taken a step back and looked at how did we get here. You know, SpaceX was involved with the range starting maybe 3 years ago, back in 2007, which was when they approached the range. It took us about 36 months to get them out onto the range with a brand new rocket and successfully launch in a safe manner. That's pretty amazing when you think of all the things that have to happen, but it's probably not good enough. And so what we've done is start the dialogue. We've spent actually two sessions with them. We spent, I think, 6 or 7 hours in conferences and in meetings with their senior leadership and just walking through with the FAA involved, with Space Florida involved, SpaceX and ourselves, all the different facets of the wing to understand how we got to a successful launch, but then how can we do it better? Yeah. And there's a lot of great insights. It's been a great exchange.
Switching gears here just a little bit, and in general, we've got about a minute for this question. The future of Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, some of the rumors persist even after the latest base closures exercise went through, that there's still this grand plan to move Patrick Air Force Base up to the south end of the Cape, move all your launch operations to the far north and shut down Patrick, and then from there every other rumor grows out of that. What's the real story right now about the long-term plan for the Cape? Again, about a little less than a minute.
Sure. Well, let me be clear. I'm not aware of any rumors, and matter of fact, we were having a discussion in the office about this the other day, and we double-checked with our headquarters because I'd heard the same rumor, and you know, coming from some of our local community members. And there's no plans right now in the Department of Defense whatsoever to move or shut down Patrick Air Force Base, and we verified that with the headquarters. No knowledge whatsoever. So I think we've got a bright future with Patrick. And if you look at our tenants, the 920th and AFTEC, we've got some unique capabilities that they rely on. So I think the future is bright for Patrick Air Force Base here on the Space Coast.
Yeah, that's great to hear, General. We appreciate that. Well, look, we're going to pause here right now for what will be our final break. And then when we return, we'll have just a couple of minutes left with General Wilson to talk about the Air Force Base and Missile Museum and ways that you can get out there and hear the story of the Cape. And in the meantime, we still invite your call, 768-1240, last chance to get in. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke. This is WMMB.
Now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And indeed, welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance. My guest for a couple more minutes is Brigadier General Ed Wilson, commander of the 45th Space Wing at Patrick Air Force Base. And as I ask my final question here, General, I want to acknowledge that I am Secretary of the Board of Directors for the Air Force Space and Mission Museum Foundation. We're the group that works with the Air Force to help tell the story of the Cape out at the Cape. Recently, we opened the new Space and Missile History Center outside the Gate 1 on the end of State Road 401, a good place for people to get a taste for what's going on at the Cape, a little bit of the history. But there's a lot more and a lot more stories to tell, General, and I was just curious from where you sit, how you see this museum growing, and when are we going to have additional opportunities perhaps to get more people out to the Cape and see what's going on out there?
Well, we're working on that one hard, Jim. You know, it was a big day when we opened up the History Center, and that's a unique asset, and I just kind of pile on to your invitation if anybody wants to swing through and get a taste of what goes on down at, you know, at the Cape from a historical perspective. What we've really been looking at is what's the right balance, because as we've already been talking about, there's a lot that goes on up the Cape.
Right.
Hazardous operations or safety concerns, and obviously there's some security concerns. So we're not going to hand out tickets and let people run around loose at the Cape. That just isn't going to happen, especially after 9/11, right. Given it's kind of a reminder today. But I think there's an opportunity to tell the story a little bit better and give more access to people. And so we've been working with not only the Space Museum Foundation, but also the Lighthouse Foundation and some of our pioneer organizations, Space Florida and some others, to see if we can't open up access in a little bit more controlled fashion, kind of in a tour arrangement. But since we operate under Title 10 as an Air Force, we are constrained. And so our lawyers are involved in the discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And do it right. And but it looks like we've got some options. And we actually have a meeting set up later this month with all the stakeholders. And we're going to look at potentially putting in motion some actions that would allow us to get more folks up onto the Cape. And I think it's a great opportunity to tell really all about the birthplace of, you know, the launch business and, you know, really complement what I think KSC does, the Kennedy Space Center does so well right now, and be able to complement that. And, you know, it would be an outreach. We'd be able to get school kids up. A lot of the folks that come in through the cruise ship lines that come and go out of the area, as well as just our local population, to learn more about what goes on up the Cape and actually go out and kick some tires and see it, you know, firsthand.
Yeah, that'd be great to do. And, of course, we certainly have plans in the long range on that History Center to continue to grow that presence.
Absolutely.
As well.
Very supportive of that. Very, very supportive of that.
Get more of the story off the base and on the place where people can see it. General, thank you so much for joining us today. And sharing some of your background and your thoughts on military space ops here at the Cape. Continued best wishes, and I know we'll talk again real soon.
That sounds great. Hey, Jim, if you don't mind, if I'm just going to put in a quick plug for Air Force Week, for those that aren't aware, the 26th through the 31st of October, we got the Thunderbirds coming in. So we'll keep that kind of Air Force lingo going. And my apologies for being too much of a marketeer, but I'd be ashamed if we didn't mention that. That's going to be a big event for the local community.
I appreciate it, and we'll definitely spend time on the show talking about it in the future. So, okay, great. Have a good weekend. Well, in our remaining time together, I also have a couple things I want to share with you. First of all, I'll let you know that Space Shuttle Discovery was moved from its hangar to the Orbiter Processing Facility. Moved from its hangar at the Orbiter Processing Facility to the Vehicle Assembly Building this past week. Last time that's going to happen, Discovery was mechanically connected to its external tank this morning and should be heading out to the launch pad for its final flight, heading out to the launch pad on September 20th with a launch date set for November 1st. Meanwhile, the next launch from Cape Canaveral targeted to fly October 19th. On that day, it's a United Launch Alliance Delta IV Heavy rocket to carry a payload into orbit for the National Reconnaissance Office. We don't have a launch time yet. That probably won't come till much later. The next thing I want to do is remind you that at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, which we just talked about a moment ago, it's having its annual free weekend for Brevard County residents. All you need to do is bring your ID or utility bill that proves you live in Brevard, as well as one non-perishable food item, a canned food item of some kind. It's a great food drive they're doing. If you have friends or family in town, you can bring them too, as every one Brevard ID can bring in up to 5 guests from wherever they are, so long as everybody has a canned food item to donate. So that's good through the rest of today and all day tomorrow. So not too late to get up there yet today and enjoy some of the exhibits and to certainly spend all day there tomorrow. By the way, of course, the Visitor Complex, a loyal advertiser here on Space Talk, and I'm happy to let everyone know about this special deal. Finally, speaking of another noteworthy event, a personal event here, I want to let you know that there's a toy drive taking place at North Salerno Park in Vieira today. The toy drive begins at 3 p.m. and ends at 8 p.m. today. This is a toy drive that benefits kids who have cancer and are hospitalized during Christmas at the Arnold Palmer and Florida hospitals in Orlando. All you have to do is show up at the park with an unwrapped toy and enjoy the fun. There's going to be a 27-foot water slide, a bounce house, all sorts of food to be had, baked goods. There's baskets, gift baskets that they're doing, 50 baskets on a silent auction prize, other kind of door prizes, music, games for kids. Again, all benefiting kids with cancer to provide them a little Christmas cheer in December. The background on this is being done in honor of a little girl named Alicia Martin, who was 8 years old when she passed away in 2006 of a rare form of cancer. Since then, her family and friends have organized something called Just One More Day, and this is their main event of the year. They collect toys on what would be Alicia's birthday today, September 11th. She would have been 12. And then they hand out the toys in the hospitals on the date that she died, which was December 23rd. Some of my best friends in Florida are very close to the family, and I wanted to make sure that everyone knew about it. Once again, I'm encouraging you to bring an unwrapped toy to the North Salerno Park in Vieira. Between now and 8 p.m., the park is located in the North Salerno subdivision of Vieira, that is west off of Stadium Drive, north of the stadium and of Vieira Boulevard. And if you can stop by again with that unwrapped toy, I would certainly very much appreciate it. Once again, remind you that throughout the week, you can stay in touch with Space Talk by visiting the WMMB webpage at WMMBAM.com. A podcast of today's program will be available shortly and will remain there for the rest of the week until next week's program. You can certainly follow us on Twitter at Space Talking. You can send us email at spacetalking@AOL.com. And what else should you know? Well, I guess next week on Space Talk, you should know that my guest will be longtime space newsman, broadcaster, and space advocate Bill Larson. He's putting together an event that is quite interesting, has quite a few possibilities. What is the event? Well, I'll tell you next week at 2 p.m. That's it for today. Thanks again for listening. Space Talk is sponsored by United Space Alliance and is a production of Mila Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer. The Home Mortgage Law Show is next here on WMMB. I'm Jim Bankey, and we'll talk to you again real soon.